Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, everyone. Welcome to the ISP Task Force meeting. Today we're going to continue discussing the draft report that will be presented to the HITECH in October on recommendations. But first, let's get started with roll call. Ken Kawamoto.
Oh, here.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Good morning. Anil Jain.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mary Malik. Andrew Trescott. Tom McDonald. Cynthia Fisher.
Yes, present.
Thank you. David McCauley.
Here.
Thank you. Edward June.
Here.
Thank you. Terry O'Malley.
Here.
Thank you. Leslie Leonard. Jack Poe.
Here.
Thank you. Raj Watwani. Ram Shuram.
Present.
Thanks. Ricky Bloomfield.
Here.
Thank you. Sasha Tarmat. Scott Warrington. Cheryl Turney. Tamara Ficori.
Here.
Thanks. Tina Esposito. Valerie Gray. And Victor Lee. All right, Stephen.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome back to, I think, what is going to be our penultimate meeting of the task force prior to presenting our final recommendations to the HITECH. What we're going to be doing today primarily is discussing additional feedback that we have received both during our very lively discussion with the HITECH last week, as well as additional input that has come from those of you on the task force. Clem McDonald actually submitted some late input this morning, which we'll see if we can get to. So we're going to work through this input today. We then have another meeting coming up in 2 weeks, and then we will hopefully be ready to present a final set of recommendations to the HITECH. So put on your roller skates here, because there's a lot of feedback that we've received, and some of it quite substantive, and I think warranting our careful attention. Ken, do you have anything to add to that?
Sounds good. I'm also just going through Clem's comment in real time, putting it in here so it can be available in the online version as we talk.
Oh, fabulous. That's great, Ken. So would you rather that I start in on the document?
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm just going through. Yeah, we just received this comment.
Great. Yeah, and thank you to Clem for sending those in. All right, so why don't we go ahead then, perfect, and switch over to the document itself. And what we'll do is we'll just go down and look through the comments and try to reconcile them and address them as best we can. We'll see how well that works today, given the time available. Some of the comments people have submitted have just been kind of simple edits and clarifications, and a few of them we've just accepted as we've gone along, as opposed to bringing them here to the committee. So we want to make the most use of everybody's time. There's obviously a lot of people on the call, both task force members and members of the public. So let's see. These comments at the top, I'm a little unclear what they are doing. So my tendency would be to skip over those. I'm not quite sure what to do with those. So working our way down here, there are some editorial comments that Ken, I think mostly you've submitted, so maybe we can come back to those because it might be, yeah. Ken, why don't you come back here? Because a lot of these comments, when I'm looking on the early pages, do have your name on them, and it might be easiest if you walk us through them. I think if we're on page 4, there's a bunch of comments.
Let's see. This part was completely added new section, I think. I'm going to look at my copy because unless you, or if you can, whoever's controlling the screen, if you could click on my comment on the right, it'll actually say where it refers to. It's hard to tell exactly what section it's for. So if you could click like on the first add comment, you know, on my name on the top one, it'll say where it's coming from. Okay, so it's talking about...
Could you make the text just a tad bigger, about 5 or 10% bigger? Some of it's, especially in the comment side, it's hard to see.
Yeah.
It does need a lot.
So the first comment, I'll look at it on my screen, so don't worry about it. So the first comment was just, I just added, in addition, overarching recommendations are first provided for issues that cross multiple priority use domains. I think that's fine because we said we would do it, so I just added that text. The next one, I said I added pending HITAC review edit approval in yellow. I think that's true. And then this next set of comments is just a new section I had added. This was before we went to HITAC, so this was there from before. So we added a cross-domain recommendations section. And the first section was a moved over the public availability of health IT standards. And then I highlighted in yellow, before it was really just referring to NCBDP, but why don't we just all look at these overarching ones and just go through them from the top, because they have, some of that have been reworded a little bit. Do you want me to review it, read it, or how do you want to review these?
I think probably a quick read is worthwhile. There are often people on the phone that are not on the web.
All right. So the first cross-domain recommendation was public availability of health IT standards. Observations: some HIT standards required by federal programs are not publicly available. There's a strong benefit in public availability of health IT standards required by federal programs, including EHR certification, to ensure public review and compliance. NCPDP standards, which support the interoperability of medication and pharmacy data, should be freely available to public, including providers, pharmacists, technology developers. It has been NCPDB's business model for the past 20 years to allow only members access to NCPDP standards. This has an NCPDP pent because we took it from the pharmacy part. Many NC-accredited SDOs and other organizations, such as the AMA for CPT, either charge for their standards or only allow member access. And Clem added here, this seems to be an unnecessary rationalization. I believe NCPD also gets money per message. That is, I think, true. I don't know. I don't know if that's true. So the question there is, do we keep it? I think
not
it's true. A true statement.
Are we going to do the hand-raising thing?
Yes, let's do the hand-raising thing. And I think, Clem, since this is your comment, do you want to comment on your comment first?
Well, the comment, which part of it? I think that was maybe gratuitous, the part of, I don't know for sure about that, but I understood they got income from per message. But I don't know that as a fact, and it should probably be taken off. But I do think we should try to encourage that the standards be free, period, and then find other ways for them to get income. So the meetings get income, the education gets income. It's a tough issue because there's got to be funded. But it makes it really hard to review a standard if you got to review it and you can't read it.
Yeah, we had an extensive discussion about this at the HITAC meeting, and there was general agreement that this was a good idea. And as you'll see, we separated out two different sections: this section that discusses access to the standards themselves, and the next section which discusses access to the code sets that the standards call for. And really, I think, in the case of CPT, it's the code set access and use that is being charged for. But again, I'm not sure how much value there is in calling this out, you know, mentioning these particular SDOs, since we are making the point more generally.
Yeah, okay.
We could just delete the whole all bullet points here, and because, you know, some HID standards required by federal programs are not publicly available, there's strong benefit in public availability. We can just remove the bullet points if you wish.
Personally, I would take out the yellow text because I think the other bullets are clarifying in a helpful way. David, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I'm sort of in agreement that the principle is what matters here, not the details on any particular standard. And I mean, the policy lever discussion might mention that in some cases it may be prudent for ONC to fund the standard directly. We might want to say something like that because there's nice precedent with SNOMED, probably CMS. But I think the principle is they must be freely available, otherwise they're not going to really serve as standards. But don't go into detail on how they support themselves.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
So the suggestion is just do a delete. Is that okay?
Sure.
Well, again, okay. Ken, my preference would be to simply delete what you have highlighted in yellow.
If we talk only about NCPDP, it might have been appropriate in the medications realm. It is no longer appropriate when, you know, we're talking about all health IT standards, right? Now that it's a general section and only talk about NCPDP standards, it seems a little bit off to talk about just one of many standards.
I'm happy to get rid of it and move on. We got to talk about
it. Okay, that's fine. Any objection from anyone else?
No objection. I'm curious how you guys would summarize the discussion in the HITAC. I didn't listen in. Was there general agreement with our point here, or was there pushback?
No, there absolutely was, and it extended to the free availability of the code sets as well. So that's what we have here on the next page. But before we go there, let's deal with this disclosure statement. We had some back and forth in the comments about that. Ken had it when he initially entered this, you know, had put in an acknowledgement that he was an unpaid board member of HL7 and drafted the recommendation. It seems to me that now that we've discussed it and agreed upon it, that the relevance of who initially drafted it is minimal. So I had suggested we take out the disclosure. Does anyone object to that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, a lot of us are active in HL7, but they don't pay us. We pay for that privilege of working with them.
Yeah, we pay several thousand dollars per trip for the privilege of going to HL7. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Great. And I'm this is David. Just in, I don't think it needs to be noted, but I'm a member of the HL7 advisory board, also unpaid. So a similar situation.
Yeah, not unusual. And then as I mentioned, there was this discussion about the availability of the code sets themselves. And again, that to me, that was a little bit of a shift from our earlier discussion about access to the standards. So really wanted to bring that here to see if people were comfortable. This is largely a mirror of the notes above, with slight change in the language. And again, I'll read it for anyone who may not be on the web. The observation is, while some code sets required by health IT standards are freely available, others require users to pay the Associated Standards Development Organization in order to utilize the codes in HIT systems. Recommendation was to develop and support a standard method to assure free public availability of all code sets referenced by required health IT standards, with the suggestion of policy levers of ONC, potentially in partnership with federal organizations such as CMS or NLM, consider paying for U.S. license to code sets required by EHR certification, we should probably say criteria and other federal requirements, and then support not only standards that are not currently freely available, but also those that are publicly available now, especially if not doing so jeopardizes the future availability and maintenance of those code sets.
Stephen, my suggestion would be to merge that into the the standards part, because I view things like, you know, CPT, SNOMED, Boink, they're just standards. It's just instead of information model standards, they're terminology standards.
I think it's worth calling out that fact that code sets are standards and are critical, just like the information model and other protocol-based standards. Whether it's two sections or not, I don't care, but I do think people need to understand that just the mere number itself can be expensive, and that is what we're suggesting should be changed. There should be a way that's not a barrier to the use of the code set.
If you could scroll up, it's being addressed up.
For the record, FHIR forbids the use of code sets that aren't free unless they're required by federal regulation.
Right, FHIR's had to make an exception for this perverse situation that we're in. So, Ken, I think that's a great suggestion to simply add that language, including standard code sets and terminologies, and then we can handle it all within one small section. Does anyone object to collapsing those two into one?
No.
Okay. I see no hands up, so we can do that. Good. All right. Then we can move on. Let's see. Clem had a concern about a sentence, which I think we've now resolved. And that one's gone. Okay. So then the next area that we got had a lot of discussion about, and Cynthia, I think you're on the phone, and you've just been a stalwart advocate of cost and price transparency. We had a lively discussion about the difference between cost and price and the importance of assuring that all of that information is available. So one suggestion was to just switch the use of the word from cost to price, but I think people use those words sometimes interchangeably and sometimes somewhat differently. So I tried to add some language to clarify this. So again, just looking at this section, healthcare costs are a major challenge facing many U.S. citizens and households. Cost and price transparency was a key component of the recommendations provided around medication, pharmacy data, but impacts many other domains, including imaging procedures, durable medical equipment, and hospitalizations. Consumers have an interest in understanding the costs of producing individual healthcare products and services. The standard prices of products and services as provided by various sources or vendors, as well as the net price that they would have to or will pay based on their individual circumstances, including coverage, deductibles, discounts, et cetera. Cost and price transparency was one of the priority areas identified by the ISPTF, but which the ISPTF did not have sufficient time to tackle. Recommendation: advance cost and price transparency in all aspects of clinical care, with policy levers suggesting the ONC advance standards for cost and price transparency, charge a task force, which could be a continuation of the ISPTF, to further assess and provide recommendations in this area, and for CMS to encourage or require the use of such standards for enabling price transparency. So a lot in there, and would welcome people's feedback.
So, Steve, I think it's good, but be aware that it really is a tough issue to really discern what people are thinking about, you know, out-of-pocket costs or what the – and costs themselves, you know, like if you're talking about how much does it cost the hospital to do some, are really, really tough. So I think we just have – it's good as it is, but I think there'll be additional, you know, tangles in the future.
Yeah, Steve, I'm
sorry, I'm on a – this is Cynthia. I'm on the phone, and I didn't raise my hand, so I apologize for not raising my hand. I'll try to do that the next time. I do think the way this is written is a little confusing between cost and price transparency. And I think if we could just, I guess I go back to just sticking with price transparency, because there are several prices that are negotiated, and you've got the charge master price, and then you've got negotiated rates, and then you have a cash price that's oftentimes lower than the negotiated rates because it's paid on the spot at the max price. So I think what would be really helpful here is to just settle on price transparency and that we would also include what's the cash price for a service as well as those negotiated rates and how what standards are used. And Jack Poe and I, on a couple of sidebars after, you know, we had offered to put forward some illustrative recommendations, have just a rough draft that we could include, but it would obviously look for discussion of the group. So I can send that in now to the task force to just think through some of the things that we outlined. But I do think we could timely, a subgroup, and Jack Poe and I did it together, would look at offering to try to put a framework together because, you know, look, we have Walmarts of the world now having a nice price list up for their new health clinic. That is, this is the price. And this is where things are moving. This is where the industry is moving. And I think it behooves us not to just say we didn't have sufficient time to tackle, but I think we could readily tackle because standards exist in the pricing world across the sector, and payment already is standardized. So.
Yeah, so Cynthia, I really appreciate those comments. We've got a number of hands up, but before we jump into them, I'll just say I don't think there's anyone arguing against this. The reality is we simply don't have time. You know, as much as you and Jack may want to dig into this, to go deeply and thoroughly through this area. So what we were trying to do was to really capture the high-level concept and say that this really warrants additional detailed focus. But let's hear the other comments. I think, Terry, you were up first.
Yeah, and this is just to speak in support of Cynthia. I would focus this solely on price and let costs go. I think it's going to be too difficult to nail down, and people are not, vendors and providers are not real happy about sharing their actual costs. But the price to the patient, what they're going to have to pay out of pocket, whether it's cash or by insurance, I think is the key issue, and I just focus on that.
I think Terry's right.
Okay, anyone committed to holding on to cost?
Except out-of-pocket cost is a nice one.
Right.
Well, I guess this is Jack Poe. So I think the comments from the other committee members makes a lot of practical sense. But if the statement was going to be very high level, like the current paragraph is supposed to be a longer doc, I wonder why is it necessary to then take out costs? If it's high level, it looks like it would be good to mention both cost and price at this level so that the potential next task force can have the charter to tackle both.
Yeah, Jack, this is Terry. I just think cost is not necessary. As a first step, I think price is really the key issue. Cost is going to take us down a whole lot of different pathways, but price is what comes out of the patient's pocket.
But yeah. This is Cynthia. I'm sorry, but the patient's pocket because their employer is also a payer, oftentimes 180 million people, the employee and the employer share on coverage. So the entire pricing needs to be known, not just a copay or a deductible or a portion of it. We need to see the entire prices. So I think we're narrowing it way too much if we just say out-of-pocket costs. So it's or out-of-pocket prices, but we need the entire net negotiated rates and just put that out there.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I implied that. I think price is what we should focus on, not cost. That's my only point.
Yeah. Let's go to Anil and then David, who have their hand up.
Thank you. I think we're getting hung up on price versus cost, but it's really two sides of the same thing. If a provider has a price, that's the cost to an employer or a patient. And so instead of that, where I'm a little hung up on is, is the first bullet, where consumers have an interest in understanding the cost of producing individual healthcare products and services. I think that's a little strong. I mean, I'm interested in knowing how much it costs to make my car, but that's not something that I know how much I have to pay for it. In healthcare, we need to make sure we know the total costs incurred in delivering the care. I think how much it actually costs to produce a drug or produce a device or to keep the lights on in the clinic is really not what we're focused on here, in my opinion.
I agree.
Agree.
However, since this is David, since I think I'm next in line, I'll follow that because I agree with that. But I think what might be missing here is what we think is the purpose of the transparency. And maybe this is part of the much broader discussion, but the goals here is for competition and choice. Or let me put it this way. Transparency doesn't do you much good without competition and choice. So we're missing a rationale for why we're calling for this transparency.
Good point.
I mean, the principle of thou shalt not be too surprised is maybe implicit, but that's not sufficient. And I think the other points that we should focus on, you know, the delivered product and its price as listed and cost to user as consumed is appropriate, not on the internal processes of how you got there.
Well,
if one car maker makes better use of robots, then good for them, but we don't need to know that as a purchaser of cars.
But back to Steve's point, this is a very deep subject. It'll be contentious for a long time because we need to find a way to say something that we like and get to more of the report.
Cynthia has her hand up.
I was agreeing that the goal is on to be able to see competition and choices as well. And maybe we can state that in there. And I think I also just agree that we're not looking for what's it cost to manufacture, what's it cost to produce, but we are really looking at variability in prices. And as we look at what other standards we're doing, where doctors refer to specialists or they're referring for a knee brace, for instance, I think across the board, the patients, rather than going blindly to a brace shop, if they can see them, see that brace, see it online, they might be able to save it and get it at a tenth of the price or go to another lab where they could get it at a tenth of the price. And so this is really important as patients become in control of their care and their choices.
So I've made some suggestions in the text that I think most of you can see to strike out the red references to cost and clarify that we're talking about price transparency, supporting competition and choice. Does anyone have any objection to striking the red and adding the green? And then I think we can move on.
I would just change the word cost to the prices of it, including
that. We got it. It's right here, Cynthia. If you look at the text, that's what we've got.
You were going to take out the red, I thought you said.
And yes, take out the red.
My point is that in the black, you say the standard prices of products. I don't think there is a standard price, so I would omit the word standard. And instead, or keep under where it says consumers have an interest in understanding, I would just keep that to say the prices of individual healthcare products and services, and take out cost of producing.
That's exactly the proposal.
Okay.
That's exactly the proposal.
Yeah.
And Stephen, it's David. I agree. I think that the closure back to what this task force is focused on, which is standards, would be to say that any standard for healthcare should, where possible or where it makes sense, include mechanisms for conveying price. right? That's the scope of our purview is standards. And so we're saying the standards should include sufficient mechanisms to convey price so that choice and competition and all these other benefits can accrue. Does that make sense?
I think so. I'm struggling with the language.
Yeah, Steve, I mean, that's pretty broad. I mean, you're going to think a lot of things where it won't be possible. So I think...
Well, I said where possible. I mean, yeah, where possible. Yeah. If the standard has, you know, nothing to do with price. But we've seen, for you know, we've seen that the some of the early prescription standards didn't include a mechanism to convey the full out-of-pocket cost information. Those have been advanced, and that's what we're saying is a good thing, and that should apply across the board to healthcare standards.
No, I agree.
I'm just sort of saying that, you know, we're about standards in this group, not about, you know, competitive policies in healthcare in the U.S., but to the degree that standards can foster transparency and competition, then I think that's the strength of our, that's the purview that we have to make a strong statement. And the good news is the standards are doing it. We're in good. It's good. It's going well.
Yeah, I like Stephen's suggestion. I think to the extent that we can make more broad statements, and it sounds like we might need another task force or something to flesh out the details, the sort of the more broad the scope that we allow them to be, I think the better. So a general statement around standards and how this can be helpful would be really helpful, I think, for the next group.
Sounds good to me.
I think we've reached a consensus. Can we scroll back up? Ken made some additional suggestions in the section above.
Yeah, I just reworded that section a little bit lower. It's the it was the standards part. Lower, as in page down. Not the opposite. Not going up. Going down the document. Yeah, there. So there's no semantic change. Clem just said that sentence structure was confusing, so I just updated it. I'm gonna just accept it, so it's easier to read, and then you can see if it makes sense. Let me see if I can fix it.
Good job.
Okay. So I wouldn't spend much time on it. Semantically, it's equivalent. I just updated the sentence structure.
Great work. Thanks, Ken. All right, team, let's scroll down to the multiple competing standards on page 7, I believe it is. And Ken, I think most of these edits.
What header is that?
Multiple competing standards.
Yes. Okay. So I took this from one of our sections and I just moved it. Was the first thing I did. So observations. And then somebody deleted the there are many custom interoperability solutions. But anyway. Oh, no. I took what initially said there are many custom interoperability solutions and I changed it. There are often multiple, sometimes competing standards that may need to be maintained as the industry moves towards single standards where appropriate and as new technologies such as FHIR are integrated into workflow. At the same time, a clear single best approach may not be available. There's a need for a process to retire standards that have been supplanted by subsequent versions, possibly as part of ISA. And then recommendations, actively seek out, and I'm going to accept these, but please review and make sure you like them. Basically, this content was there from before. I just reworded it a little bit. Recommendations, actively seek out and identify opportunities to consolidate, simplify, and render cost-effective to health IT interoperability landscape. I think make more, I don't know what render cost-effective means. Make more cost-effective, I'm going to just say consolidate and simplify because I don't understand what make more render cost effective means. And simplify the so actively seek out and identify opportunities to consolidate and simplify the health IT interoperability landscape. And then there was Clem had a comment on this saying what does this mean, like why, you know, we have to pick something. But
This was from before. We had said ONC should avoid picking winners prematurely and remain open to potential alternative approaches which may ultimately be superior for a given problem or in a larger context that considers various use cases, e.g. by avoiding the need to maintain separate infrastructure for multiple use cases. So I think the point here was the prematurely part. I think ultimately people, you know, we do want to pick winners, right? The question is, and so I underlined that there. So I'm just going to accept for now and then we can.
Well, I don't think that paragraph is operationally implementable. And what does it mean? And it's sort of saying, let's keep all the things in play and never get a decision. And that part, I think.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so. I think the point is prematurely. It's saying, just don't make a decision before it's clear. So I think the context of this was in the referrals, where there was direct-based referral mechanisms like 360, and there were fire-based, and we were talking about pros and cons. And
maybe an example would help, though, Ben.
Yeah.
Or would that be too complicated?
Direct versus fire-based referral.
As I look at the rate of adoption of FHIR, I don't know what could be premature.
Well, it might be premature to require it to the exclusion of other methods, because truly in practice, much is done using CCDA and has not moved to FHIR. I mean, as much as in our meetings, we all talk about FHIR, but in the real world, we're not really using
as much. I accept that. Yeah, I accept that.
And I think it's similar kind of thing for like CCDA, CDA, right? Like most records still do move around based CDAs. I think it'd be premature to say, like everyone, like just stop using CDAs, start using FHIR for everything you're doing CDAs for now.
Right. Okay. I take it all back.
Okay. Perfect.
Comment?
David.
Yes.
I think this is another fairly complicated space. I'm okay with the words we've got here, but it's just scratching the surface. So one thing ONC can do and is doing is to assess the existing standards and rate them, point out their strengths and weaknesses, consolidate access so that people who want to understand the standard can quickly find the right places. That's what the standards advisory document and website does, and I think we could endorse that that's a good thing. But at the same time, the premature optimization on a standard should be reserved, or let's say a regulatory focus on a particular standard should be reserved for cases where the market has failed to solve the problem. It's really regulation should address market failure. It would be my, now it's a political perspective, but that's what you get into here.
But none of these things are operationalizable and an effective procedure to actually have that happen.
Yeah, these are, you know, policies are broad goals, and the process of turning that into actual regulatory language is complex. We're not going to solve that. I think we're trying to say be cautious about switching to new standards. It really should be, don't do it premature. Wait until there's some kind of market failure.
Well, wouldn't say that, because the nature of this is to wait. You know, Medicare didn't wait, nor did we wait about e-prescribing, and then it happened. We've been waiting for 20 years now.
But e-prescribing happened before there was a regulatory requirement for it. It happened because markets addressed the problem.
That's not how I
don't.
So.
I'm not proposing that we get into that debate. But I think the word premature here is rolling up those complex notions of when is it time to regulate the use of a standard. That's a big decision. That's a difficult decision.
Well, I think as stated, it's okay, but I wouldn't go further with waiting, using that word.
You know, so I really appreciate the dialogue here. I do think that Ken has captured this as best we can. We're avoiding prematurely picking winners, and then down below under policy levers, where appropriate, such as in the case of failure of the industry to reach consensus on its own, the ONC should commission or support efforts to identify functional overlap and identify opportunities for consolidation. That seems like it captures it, and of course, there's lots of devil in these details.
Yeah, I like that language.
All right, any objections? Being sensitive to the time that we have available, is anyone uncomfortable with where this ended up?
No.
Awesome. Great. All right, let's move on. I've accepted all those changes. We then come down, so those were the overarching issues that we had moved up to the top across domain recommendations, and now we're back down into orders and results, which we've tackled a number of times, and hopefully we're just doing cleanup work at this point. Ken and Sasha have some comments that were included down below on page 9, if we can scroll down there.
The first
Ken, you was a Clem comment, right?
Well, I think we throw away around this information model without much precision. And FHIR claims it's an information model, but we don't. I mean, what are we really? I don't want to get too much into it, but I don't know that it's clear what anybody means by that.
Well, I think I can clarify, like for me, an information model in FHIR for labs is the fact that there is an observation that has a code and a value in a normal range. And the terminology standard is using, saying like, you know, the...
No, okay. I get it. That's good. I get it. But shouldn't we maybe say that so that people aren't some vague thing that's... That's me too hard, so never mind. We won't get that done. But it'd be nice if we anchored in something.
Hello, this is Ramier. Can I say something on the FHIR?
Please, go ahead, Ram, and feel free to use the hand-raising feature also.
I don't know where the hand-raising, I'm just trying to figure out where that is, okay? But in any case, FHIR is not, I'm not sure it's an information model per se. It's a protocol, and... it's a mechanism to do certain, ask for services and all kinds of things. So calling FHIR, I'm not so sure I would call it an information model. Is it normally accepted? I'm just trying to...
That phrase is inside of it, and when you look at some of their specifics, it's pretty much, I think it is, as Ken said.
Yes, I agree, it is. It's a low-level information model. In addition to being a protocol, I mean, it's more than one thing. But I think the goal here is to call out the notion that it's not sufficient just to have a protocol. It's not sufficient to just have name and value code sets. If you want to convey complex clinical information, you need higher layers of knowledge in your standard. And that's what an information model gives you. It may be self-evident to anybody who's worked on standards, but there's a naive understanding, I think, a lot of times that if you have a code set like SNOMED or LOINC, that you're done. If everybody would just use SNOMED or LOINC, we'd be done. And I think the point here is, no, you're not. You need an additional set of constraints on top of those code sets called an information model if you want to interchange higher-level semantic knowledge.
Okay, Sasha, you had some specific comments here that you did as a comment as opposed to a suggested edit. Do you want to comment on this and where you think we should put it?
So my colleagues who have more experience with SNOMED than I do felt that the highlighted bullet maybe oversimplified exactly when SNOMED should be used versus when LINK should be used, and they recommended the resource I linked in the comment on guidance of using SNOMED and LINK in conjunction with each other as the appropriate sort of best practice to endorse.
Now, that publication is published by SNOMED. That's, I don't buy that. That's very deeply self-interested by the one organization.
Well, and yet I think we are looking for this clarification of how these two standards and code sets are utilized together.
Well, I think it's stated in ISA, and it's stated in a number of places. It's stated in the US CDI, at least in the case where it's called out. I mean, the other part of it is we've got to be honest that there will be cases in the case of LOINC for a test, in the case of SNOMED for a diagnostic statement or answer, there isn't a good code. So it's got to be a little bit soft. I don't want to be too soft. I think in FHIR they do soften it, because they're not, the codes aren't always there.
I think the language Ken is adding to highlight this as a relevant resource is appropriate.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's nice to include this, because clearly deep thought has been put into this.
That is SNOMED saying how they want it used. I just think that's very biased.
Well, we're not picking winning and losing standards in this task force. We're identifying issues that should be prioritized. And solving this particular problem is obviously still out there if, Clem, you think SNOMED advice is bad. So I think mentioning it.
It's bad. I don't think it's appropriate at this level any more than having CPT declare what should be used. I mean, nobody. I mean, neither of them should be making those declarations.
But I think that's what we're calling for prioritized development, is to focus on solving these problems. So
well,
if you want to have,
I'm
if
only
there should
saying
be a,
an independent process, not one that's managed by one of the organizations that has an interest in how it comes out.
But I don't think we're calling for endorsement of the SNOMED recommendation, but just pointing to that is the kind of problem that needs to be solved. If there's an equivalent LOINC document that has a different perspective, we could link to that as well. But from a standard priorities development, this is still a gap.
It's not an unbiased statement. That's all
I'm saying. So I think I try to address it. Can folks read it? And see if that's sufficient. I do agree, we just need to move on. Clem, can you, if we say, well, potentially biased in perspective, is that sufficient?
Well, that helps.
If it's okay, shall we just accept this and move on?
ISA is already specifies where which should be used and not used. That would be a less biased perspective.
Another relevant reason.
It's not.
Resource is the ISA guidance. I want to use LOINC versus SNOMED.
And neither of these goes nearly deep enough to convey complex clinical information. These are still simple name value proposals, which doesn't get you to end game.
Well,
albeit it's important where it's a step forward. But
should that paragraph be added as the next bullet?
I thought there was something around this. I'm trying to look. There's a whole section on that later about how standard semantic interop requires standards around information models in addition to associated terminology. So let's not add it right now. That's one section below this, or two sections below this. The notion that, you know, current models are only support the simple stuff.
No, actually, ISA guidance goes beyond laboratory results. It talks about observations versus the values of those observations in general under many categories.
For observations. How's that? Okay. I think if it's okay, we should maybe just keep moving.
The next section where we suggest link-based coding of tests and somebody-based, that probably belongs under, is that a recommendation or is that a policy lever?
Oh, that's a policy lever.
Okay, I'll move it down then. That's what I thought.
Well, this is, again, a case where I think we ought to be a little careful that there'll be cases where neither of them will have the right code. I mean, neither Link nor Snowman.
Yeah, we run into that now. So after we move it to the policy lever, let's add a sentence on, you know, or like what basically there needs to be a way to deal with there isn't a code for what you need to translate, you know, send. So I'm looking, Stephen, did you already move it? Yeah. I guess that's, would CLIA comes under CMS, right? So should we just keep it under CMS? And if for the screen, if we can scroll it down to under CMS, it's further down under policy levers. We can scroll down about half a page. Let me scroll down half a page for what's being displayed. Thank you. Down to where it says CMS, another half a page. Yeah, the bottom of this. Yeah, perfect. So this section moved it. And then Clem, you had a comment about this. I think your comment was might want to provide a small out for these as FHIR does. Codes don't exist. That's true. I agree. How about I'm going to put in here. There should be a mechanism, an exception, as is done in the case of FHIR, US Core FHIR profiles, where a relevant code does not exist, right? E.g., the notion of a home blood pressure. Reading for Link. Does that work? We were running into things where, like, I can't believe this isn't in Link.
Well, I mean, it's a very tricky area. I don't know if we can solve it because, you know, what it's probably reported as blood pressure, but there are cases where you need an extensible or something like that to say more.
I mean, that's a classic information model problem. Do you separate it into type of measure and location of measure, or do you conflate them into a single code? That's an information model decision.
And the law, that actually will probably be apparent from the other parts of the message.
Does this address your issue, Clem?
No, it's that, you know, so Medicare has sentences as answers. They can't go into SNOMED in their assessments. There's lots of stuff like that. You know, although have a chain of things, and that's not allowed in SNOMED. And Link has other limitations. They just haven't gotten to certain spaces. So I just think exception, be aware of there may be a need for exceptions. That's all I want to say.
For relevant code, e.g., where a relevant link code does not exist to identify an observation or where a value should not be represented using a standard SNOMED code, right?
Yeah.
That's
cannot rather than should not, right?
Yeah. Well, they have rules that right now forbid certain kinds of codes. But that's not, I mean, the important thing is there should be a room for exceptions. Because
yeah.
It will happen.
Which is why it's pretty risky to say that something should be made a condition of practice. Right? Do we really want to say that?
Well,
you mean a condition of participation?
A condition of participation, I'm sorry, yeah.
This is one of our conditions, though.
That's actually why I brought it up. You could be torn by this because if we do something strong, it'll happen. But there's some point at which we shouldn't be too strong, and we should allow for cases that can't be done. Now, of course, once you do that, then anything that can't be, you know, that they don't do, they'll declare it couldn't be done. So it's tricky.
But I think that's where, I mean, that's what standards do, is they identify the part that can be standardized and potentially make it mandatory, and then identify the parts that can be relegated to free text or other non-standard approaches. Every standard has those boundaries.
Yeah.
Fire and everything else. There's comments in fire, right? I mean,
right,
you're
right.
Allowed to do that.
Right. So just, I was suggesting some softening, and I don't know that we can find the perfect level, though I'm a fan of certain codes, but we got to recognize some limits.
Well, thank you, Clem, for that. I think we've captured it about as well as we can in the time allowed. I'd like to scroll back up. Sasha has some really pertinent comments, and I really want to thank those who took the time to really read through this carefully. Sasha, do you want to walk us through your thoughts up above? Maybe if you can scroll up on the screen, Sasha's comments are on page 10.
I'd be happy to. I don't remember exactly what was on page 10, so I'm scrolling frantically.
Here we go. Go up a little bit more, folks. There we go. Perfect.
So the first comment, I think, was just an endorsement of the recommendation that we had. This, as the comment I mentioned earlier, came from my sharing of our recommendations draft with colleagues of mine who were experts in all the different areas, labs, medications, different types of interoperability. So they strongly endorsed the bullet about prioritizing accurate coding at the data source as the best method, which was, I think, what the task force had preferred. And that's my first comment. The second comment had to do with under policy levers and responsibilities, the second bullet about working with HL7 for standards-based exchange of textual reports. My colleagues read this as perhaps implying that there was no place for textual reports and that the intention was to convert things that have been historically narratives, like anatomic pathology reports, into structured data. I didn't think from our task force conversation that that was the intention, so I thought it would be pertinent to clarify that our goal was to standardly exchange things that are in text format with as much structured data as possible, but not to eliminate the use of narrative reports for areas where it's useful.
Well, I'd reinforce that because I think the whole part of the note reports in Vermont is just exactly that. If it's reported as text, like radiology reports, let's get it out there. Let's get it sent to them with some labels so you can store it properly.
Does that work?
That addresses, I think, my colleague's confusion. Ken, thanks. And then on the next bullet, I think my colleagues had some specific recommendations on how we could address the concern that Loic was at here. If you hit show more, they made some specific recommendations. So there were some elements that they thought would maybe be using a Loic code, but possibly other metadata, like coded units, testing methodology, they thought a hierarchical relationship with respect to how granular or specific a particular link code was would be useful. That aligned with Mitch of our conversation. And then their final suggestion was a process for sort of provisional LOINC codes. If the concern is that they aren't being developed quickly enough for new tests, having something standard that was not reusable but sort of provisional for that purpose might be addressing the need if our goal is to always use LOINC even as a new test comes onto the market and hasn't been assigned a code yet.
This is obviously very detailed. It's also incredibly helpful, and it's a level of detail that we had attempted to get down to when we went through this initially. So I really appreciate, Sasha, you're working with your team to bring this forward.
Well, I'd like to indicate that there is a hierarchy, and it's been improved recently. So it sounds like this sort of talks as though there isn't. That's number one. Laboratories actually ask directly, many of them, for LOINC codes before they're delivered. But the volume is very high, and I think the question later on about resources to make enough capacity to handle the volume as it comes in. Mayo has coded all the, 80% of the orders in one side of their business and about 60% in another side of their business, which include panels. And if all of them do that, the capacity will be limited. I think provisional, if just saying people make up their own codes, will be sort of a bad path. We'll end up with just a whole bunch of local codes.
Although I think it is useful, kind of like how SNOMED has the ability to create a local name space with extensions for the notion of provision. We run into this as a real challenge.
Yeah, LOINC could do that, but we got local codes already with their own coding system. So,
we run into real problems though, Clem. Like, where as a practical matter, in some EHR systems, you may only represent a fire message using LOINC or pull using LOINC. I mean, it's anyway. I think it would be useful.
Well,
yeah, I agree. I think
how do we make local codes be standardized? That's what we're talking about.
But the point is to have a standard way of being non-standard. That's what a provisional code approach does, so that you know that this is in fact a non-standard provisional placeholder, as opposed to something completely unspecified and random. It's a small step forward. I mean, every coding system supports this. XML, everybody.
Let's just clarify what you're saying. You're saying any institution could make up a code and call it provisional. Is that right?
If they can't find a LOINC code because it doesn't exist yet, or whatever reason they can't find it, they can flag that this is a placeholder for a LOINC code in the future that we're going to substitute a provisional marker for, so that anyone knows downstream this is a provisional code.
Well, they can send the local codes now, David.
But they don't do it in a consistent way.
What's consistent about them inventing a new code that's just like their local code? Buyer says it can send local codes.
You flag it as the intent. You're capturing the intent. The intent is to use a LOINC code. It's not available. This is a placeholder.
But without any discussion, without any adjudication, without any check to see if there isn't one in there, just didn't look.
I think the idea was, Clem, that it would enable other possibilities, such as linking provisional codes to the LOINC codes once they are created and having that available on the back end. I think there's possibilities that it would provide, even including tracking how long provisional codes are used before they're replaced with a formal LOINC code, that aren't necessarily possible with local codes. That was, I think, part of the thinking, as David said, and Ken, of my colleagues in saying
it would be useful for people who don't want to bother about standard codes or having to, if you see what comes in, people just want their own stuff, and then why bother if they just let them do what they've been doing?
Well, Clem, I think this is, I mean, we obviously want things standard. Like taking the specific example of like a 24-hour blood pressure, right? So, or sorry, a home blood pressure. Blink has one that says, was the home blood pressure low, high, or medium? But if you want one that says this was the actual home blood pressure, there is no Loinc code. If we wanted to use Loinc, the only current approach is to petition Loinc, wait maybe at best 6 months for it to be adopted, and then another 6 to 12 months before it's actually available in a health system to start using. Like I think, you know, it really just comes down to at that point, what do we do? You know,
well,
in Nomad, we can create a local extension.
Fire tells you what to do. It says use the general code and then add whatever you want to be more specific. Currently, that's what's the current guidance.
Use a blood pressure, just regular blood pressure? Well,
there's a lot of blood pressures, but yeah, you'd use diastolic, you know, not just blood pressure. You'd use diastolic or systolic or median, whichever you're really measuring. And then you can add your local code or some other thing that would specify that it's a home. But there's also indication, because I think if you look in the bigger part of the message, there's stuff in there that says this is done in clinic A or B or C. The encounter is going to be specific to that. So you have other ways to show that. I mean, to make this stuff work, you got to have a discussion of all the stuff with a larger group. Otherwise, you've got what we have now, local, everything's local. We got a file of 7 billion Loinc codes from 14 institutions, and it's working for a lot of stuff. But and I think the only way to handle the time lag is to help with the volume, like having some resources beyond what's now available.
All we're saying is consider at this point. So if you look at how we currently specified, and I'm going to just accept these so it's a little bit easier to read. Let's see if this may be why don't we look at the proposed wording and see if it captures the notion. That's the bullet point 3. So consider introducing a standard approach to developing provisional Loinc codes where new Loinc codes cannot be provisioned and implemented quickly enough as new instruments are introduced, perhaps in a manner similar to how SNOMED CT enables Loinc code extensions. Note that such an approach risks reducing interoperability. So it's really consider. It's not saying do it, it's saying consider it.
Well, there is actually already an attribute of trial use that you can use before you get, you know, the first thing. But it does take too long. So as the volume increases, I don't know how to avoid that without, well, it's a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it's gone to the point where we've considered in production introducing a Loinc code like Loinc SNOMED CT this, because SNOMED has the concept, but Loinc doesn't. And, you know, it's like, well, do we wait a year and a half or not?
Okay. All right. Go ahead with it.
Okay. And so it says potential. Well, so we removed consider. Is that okay? That's a
yes.
I just added a little parallel sentence structure there.
And could we just say standard while codifying? Should we say standardizing? Or, I don't know.
Well, we're talking about additional elements here.
Well, now units of measure already are specified standards. So what are we really talking about?
Yeah, actually it is, such as discrete coded units.
And it's required by FHIR, and it's required by DICOM, and it's required by...
Yeah, it uses UCOM, right?
Yes.
How about the testing methodology, Clem? Is that already in there?
There are testing... Yeah, there's ways to specify them, but there the challenge becomes how granular you want to get. There's a challenge with the granularity of methods, and there's a challenge in knowing when they're different. You know, except for the coarse ones.
Yeah, I don't understand the units of measure one for sure, because Loinc specifies you must use UCOM.
So, Sasha, do you have any insight here? Because this came from your comment.
No, I'll ask my colleagues, and I'll put in a comment if I get more clarity.
Okay. And testing methodology, should we keep that in or leave it out?
Well, there's an option. I think it would be helpful to have more specifics versus what. There is there are generic or a large chunky methodology like chest X-ray and CT and MRI and that kind of thing in certain areas. And there's also chunky ones in some of the labs, but mostly labs are standardized across, a lot of the common labs are standardized across methodologies. But whether
yeah,
or not,
well,
there's stuff like, you know, creosol violet is a specialized way to do one of the albumin tests. But some people complain about that. You know, they don't want to make those distinctions. So we got them both in some cases.
Isn't the testing methodology implied by the link code in most cases? There's like a link.
Yes, but sometimes it's not specified because it's, you know, they aren't distinctions or nobody cares about the distinctions or they have to be standardized across the methods.
Why don't I ask my colleagues for some clarification since I don't have the context for some of the questions that you're raising now, and we can.
I mean, the other part of it is, if you're talking about lab tests, you're not going to get the protocol. They're going to do what they do, and they don't have the details in a coded form inside, so it's going to be hard to get more specific.
Yeah.
Unless you ask for their protocol. I would guess regarding units, they're looking for a number, an enumerated list of all units.
Given our lack of clarity, I suggest we strike this sub-bullet I and stick to the II and the triple I.
Okay, that sounds good. And then we'll just ask for, so we'll remove this. And then
Sasha, if you can bring back any further clarification, that would be great.
Yep, I'll take that as a follow-up. Thanks.
Excellent. All right, we are closing in on public comments, but we've got another 5 minutes. Any other comments? I don't see any hands raised. This is obviously the active participants have been few in number, but deep in their thoughts.
Steve and Ken, I want to publicly compliment you for all the work you've done. It's a ton of work, and you've done a really good job.
Thank you, Clem. I assure you that all the task force co-chairs have just been tremendous through this high-tech process in the past year or so. It's really, it's a great opportunity to serve. Okay, let's scroll down to the next section, and we'll sort of start in here. This is going to be at the bottom of page 12, I think. Level of granularity of standard codes differ according to use. There we go. Good. And Ken, you captured some comments here as well as Sasha. Do you want to? I think some of these came from David and from Clem, though. So perhaps we can start in on those.
I'm trying to think what I was thinking there.
The first one here had to do with information model, which I think we've sort of covered up above.
Yes, and this is actually a comment from David where I just put in his comment.
Right. So, David, I think you agreed that we had managed the information model issues up above as best we could.
Yeah, I think so. We're not going to solve it in this document, so as long as we register that there's more than just code sets, and that it,
great.
I think, is an unsolved problem as to where information models should come from. There's funding issues and jurisdiction issues. So there are some thorny, I'll call them policy level issues. But at a minimum, we should register the need for that work in terms of prioritizing future actions, which is what our goal is here.
The next one was Clem's comment, I believe. And is public comment 9:15 or is it 9:20? Oh, sorry. Never mind.
20 after.
Okay.
Well, should I elaborate on this? So, you know, the blood pressure is a classic example where you need more structure. And we proposed that in one of the, maybe the most recent or the one before it, ONC rule. And it was rejected for simplicity reasons. They didn't want to. But there are, and these are things that could go into the FHIR model easy, because FHIR has a model for blood pressure, but there's just two variables in it. You know, and it could use more that could be optional, like cuff size and standing and sitting and with, you know, et cetera. That's true of most of the vital signs. But there's this tension between, you know, we've got to stay simple and dealing with the model as it really is. So I think it'll evolve in FHIR, honestly. But I think Dave's point is well taken. It's a tough problem, and I do think it'll evolve.
Do we need to change anything in here or add anything to address your comment?
Well, I think we should re-comment that there are models in FHIR. They're just not very comprehensive. They are
Clem, but there's models. But there's models in, you know, there's SIMI, there's Open EHR, Archetypes. There's a bunch of standards for those models that are competing and vying, and I don't think there's a winner yet. FHIR is too static.
Some of those models aren't going to win in the U.S.
I think FHIR is the right place to solve it, but it hasn't been solved. So calling out that more work is needed is I think, the level that we're at here.
I think that's right.
We're not going to solve it, but...
Yeah, and it's ongoing, but, you know, you got to walk before you run.
Yeah, and that's what all the code sets do. That it's just not complete. So in terms of prioritizing future standards development, this is the next turn of the crank, solving these next level problems for more complex information models that go beyond the existing standards.
Well, I just wanted to highlight that there are information models in FHIR, and the problem is they're too simple.
They're information models in SNOMED and in LOINC. They're also too simple.
They're not the same. Well, you're right. But I really think that, I think FHIR will end up being the source because the momentum is so huge. You know, resistance is futile, as Schwarzenegger said.
So let's hold there.
Personally agree,
it's time for public comments, guys, and we want to be... Yeah, be good to that. So let's go ahead and read the public comment info.
Great, thanks. Operator, can you open the line for public comment, please?
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad, and a confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And do we have any comments in the queue?
No comments at this time.
Okay, thank
Excellent.
You.
Steven. Now we can continue. Just want to be sure we respect our public process.
And just as a logistical issue, if we can go back to the Google Doc, we need to make a determination probably by the end of the call today, maybe leaving a few minutes, whether we feel we can complete our work in the next meeting or whether we need to schedule another meeting or look at, for example, like extending a meeting to start earlier and later, that kind of thing. Making good progress, but there's a lot of meaty comments here. Maybe let's discuss that at the final few minutes. So how about this, Clem, does what I added address your concerns? So potential approaches to developing and defining these more complex information models include the use of more granular FHIR profiles, clinical information modeling initiatives, SIMI models, open EHR archetypes, et cetera.
I don't think we should bring in players that haven't been players in the U.S. I mean, okay. we're less focused than we really are. The Archetypes has had no uptake in the U.S., and I don't think, what is the other one? And SIMI, not much. But I would mention it.
I don't, I, yeah. I mean, I'm I agree that as a standard, it's unlikely to gain much traction in the U.S., but as a source of models and information and learning, it's pretty valuable. And it heavily influences what Graham does in FHIR anyway. So whether we mention it or not, it's in the minds of the people that are working on these problems. So I don't really care.
It sounds like our thinking is cabbaging rather than focusing. It's been around a long time. It's never been mentioned before.
Well, it's been pretty heavily being used within SIMI and whatnot as a source of requirements.
It's in use in Europe. It's a relevant standard. But we're not endorsing it. We're just saying learn from it.
And just as a note, Claude Nanjo demonstrated the HL7 meeting last week using SIMI models to create and do real-time translation of FHIR and execute CQL. So there's ways that these aren't mutually exclusive, right? You can have the instantiation be like a FHIR structured definition without the source of truth underlying it being the structured definition.
Okay.
Okay, so if this looks resolved, let's move on. Oh, sorry. You had another comment, Glenn. So this was just saying this is another...
Well, I think the second statement here really is redundant with talking about roll-ups you talked about above.
Yeah. Do we just delete it?
Well, decide.
I don't know that we went into specifically this level of granularity, the idea of trending semantically equivalent test results together. Was that copied above? I don't think it was, Ken. This is from a... patient clinician standpoint, this is incredibly important.
All right. See
you. And Sasha?
Sure. So I have the next two. On the prioritization one, my colleagues and I supported prioritizing the most important order types, but we were puzzled because in our earlier recommendations, we actually recommend all, and it seemed inconsistent. So we would actually recommend going back to the earlier one where it said all and reconciling with, like, this sense of prioritization.
Yeah.
Is this the yellow highlighted one that says cardiac pulmonary? Is that what you mean by all? I'm reading the wrong place.
Well, we point out prioritizing the most common and important results of each order type. And above, we said really all orders. I think the idea here would be to prioritize, to do the most common things first, knowing that the overarching goal is to get everything semantically interoperable.
Yeah. And I think amend earlier to say all, starting with those to be prioritized to be the most common or something, that would reconcile it well.
I think that sounds good.
Yeah.
But be aware that some of the big referral labs, I made a comment later on, are submitting all their order panels to LOINC. One of them has got 9,000 orders or 8,000 orders, and it's already completed about 6,000 of them. Some of them are redundant. I mean, all need different LOINC codes. So,
and Sasha, can we...
Don't you shoot too low.
Sasha, sorry, thanks. Yes, Clem. We'll get to that comment momentarily here. Sasha, do you want to sort of take a stab at finding the text further up and doing the reconciliation? That'd be
just
great.
Leave that comment in here to remind me, and I'll go back and find the all and suggest language in line.
Perfect. Yeah.
My next comment was just that my colleagues weren't sure in the next bullet when we said clinical conditions if we were referring to diagnoses or results or something else. some combination of those, and they, if they were confused, they thought maybe others would be, and maybe we could clarify.
Well, I took clinical conditions to be the fire thing, like a problem.
So, like diagnoses?
Well, that's too strong a word. But like diagnoses, yeah.
I think we're saying that it's key, like observations related to common clinical conditions.
Yeah, I think the ejection fraction is an observation. Is that the one we're talking about? Ejection.
That was the example.
Yeah, of which observation should be associated with which conditions.
Right.
And make sure we dealt with them.
Right. I mean, my thought, I think I put that example in there, and the thought was that for common clinical conditions, being able to structure sort of essential parameters of that condition would be a step in the direction of moving towards more semantic interchange. Notwithstanding that we're not going to eliminate text, because I certainly don't want to eliminate text.
Dave, you're right on. You don't need thousands of terms to do this either.
No. It's a very few that clinicians actually care about.
Yeah.
I think we need to just pause there. We do need to discuss what we're going to do next time. Maybe we can, because we only have like a minute left. Stephen, do you feel like our current...
Yeah, I think we're going to run out of time. There's been such great input, and I suspect that some other folks are going to be inspired to go in and do a careful read. I think your concept that we need to consider an additional meeting is a good one. As it stands... our next meeting is on the 8th, and then we're presenting to the HITECH or giving the final to the HITECH on the 16th. I would suggest that we add another meeting a week from today on the 1st, appreciating that not everyone will make it, but that we give that a shot. Does anyone object to that?
I have a conflict with this time next week.
Yeah, I do too, but that's not relevant.
Well, I'd hate to do this without you, Ken. Did you have another suggestion? I think the 15th is too late.
Sometime next week would be good. Would potentially something like next Friday potentially work for folks?
What's that date?
That would be October 4th. Stephen, do you have clinic on Fridays?
Yeah, I do. That's going to be hard for me. Could you go later on a Tuesday, Ken? Or is it a...
My Tuesday looks really bad. Okay. I could potentially do 3:30 Eastern. Or we could do 3:00 Eastern, where we have our force
which are called. Is that Tuesday the 3rd?
Tuesday the 1st. Yeah, we. Anyone strongly object to 3:00 Eastern, Tuesday the 1st, as an attempt to sneak in an extra meeting?
No objections.
I think that could work.
Great. Let's try that. Let's put it down for 90 minutes, and we'll see what kind of participation we have, and we'll do the best we can. I really appreciate everyone's willingness to dig deep and invest time in this. I think we're going to have a great product, and we want it to be as good as we can make it.
Now, this would be what time, though, again?
It'll be noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Tuesday, the 1st of October. Thank you all for your participation. Sorry for running over by a minute.
And thank you also to the public who signed on and left some written comments, and we're here to help us along. We will hopefully speak to most of you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.